We want women to be educated. They can create their own journey, but we want them to have evidence-based information to make the right choices for themselves. We have to increase access to care and treatment. It is abysmal. By the time they go to the doctor, they've already been suffering for so long, and then to be dismissed and then to try again. And it's just exhausting trying to work with the healthcare system. So that's the second one. And the third one is having menopause inclusive workplaces. We really believe there is a direct link between the glass ceiling and menopause that is not talked about enough.
Welcome to This is Perimenopause, the podcast where we delve into the transformative journey of perimenopause and beyond. I'm one of your hosts, Mikkel.
And I'm your other host, Michelle. And we know firsthand how confusing, overwhelming, and downright lonely this phase of life can be.
Join us as we share real-life stories and expert advice to help you navigate this journey and advocate for your best health.
We used to think menopause signaled an end, but really, it's just the beginning.
Welcome back to This is Perimenopause. We're excited to share our conversation with Trish Barbado, co-founder of the Menopause Foundation of Canada. Trish has held numerous senior leadership roles in healthcare, including her current position as president and CEO of the Arthritis Society. In today's episode, Trish shares her story that ignited her passionate advocacy for women's health, specifically the challenges of menopause. We explore the Menopause Foundation's mission and the incredible advocacy work they're doing to enhance support for women in menopause. Curious if real change is possible for menopausal women? Trish will inspire you with how her foundation is making major strides in support for menopause in Canada. Trish, hi, welcome.
Thank you so much. Wonderful to be here.
We're so delighted to have you. I got a chance to speak with you a little bit in person last week, and now we're just ecstatic to be able to share you and all of your insights with our listeners. So thank you for being with us.
So excited.
So Trish, you have a very impressive career. You're a very busy woman. Maybe you could tell us about your background and what inspired you to co-found the Menopause Foundation of Canada.
Well, I'm an accountant by background, but I've been in healthcare most of my career. And I was working at a large global company, senior executive, and I started having all these symptoms, like many women, bewildered, had no idea what was going on. And it was really starting to impact my work. I was having 30, 40 night sweats and hot flashes a day. I would wake up every 20 minutes at night.
Oh my God.
I would use a towel to just soak up all the sweat, and I would have another one on the ready. I mean, it was just like, it was so extreme. And I was literally losing my mind. And that's just, I mean, I had probably 20 symptoms, but those were the most debilitating, the night sweats and hot flashes. And when I went to try and figure out what the heck was going on, like so many women, I'm just repeating the same story. Thousands, millions of women have the exact same story over and over again. As you know, you go to your doctor. I basically got a pat on the head. I couldn't access care and treatment. I am in healthcare. I am aggressive. I couldn't figure it out. And I thought, what is happening to women? I can't do this. How on earth are other women dealing with this? My colleague, Janet Koh, at the time we had worked together at our previous role, she too was having a very similar situation. She actually retired from her job and only in hindsight realizes it was perimenopause.
Wow.
She thought it was so many other things, but certainly she didn't know what the word perimenopause meant. I didn't either. So we had become, I would say, patient advocates and had worked in the Toronto area with the menopause clinic, but it was really related to that. And what we decided was, is we were interested in advocacy and we had to do something. Who else was going to do it? It had to be us. No one else was doing anything. And this was way back. We were talking about this in 2017, way before anything was anywhere. No one was talking about menopause in Canada.
Oh my God, there was nothing.
Yeah. I literally incorporated it. We talked about it. I incorporated it. We drew up a plan. We created priorities and off we went.
Amazing. And you guys are doing such incredible work for women and for women's healthcare. It's amazing. Can you tell us a little bit more about the mission and the vision for the Menopause Foundation of Canada?
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, it's really, we can crystallize it in three main things. We're trying to close the knowledge gap for women. We want women to be educated. They can create their own journey, but we want them to have evidence-based information to make the right choices for themselves. We have to increase access to care and treatment. It is abysmal what women have to go through to find appropriate care and treatment. It takes years. Women already don't talk about their symptoms to the degree that they are. There's studies on this. Women say, oh, I had 10 hot flashes. They had 20. So they're already, by the time they go to the doctor, they've already been suffering for so long, and then to be dismissed and then to try again. And it's just exhausting trying to work with the healthcare system. So that's the second one. And the third one is having menopause inclusive workplaces. We really believe there is a direct link between the glass ceiling and menopause that is not talked about enough. We need to really, and not just for the executive, I mean, everyone. I worked in healthcare all my life. It's the backbone of it is nurses and personal support workers. The average age is late 40s for this cohort. They've been leaving the workforce in droves. So just for the country, we must fix this problem.
Yeah. But if we could dive into your latest report, I guess, which is called Menopause and Work in Canada. And you focused on the economic impact of menopause. And what blew me away is that in Canada alone, the annual impact is $3.5 billion because of unmanaged symptoms. That's crazy.
Yes. It's crazy, and it's crazier because we worked with Deloitte on that analysis, and that is very conservative.
Really?
Extremely conservative. I honestly think the cost is probably in the $10 billions. And if you include the extraneous items, the number of tests and unnecessary treatments and screens that women go through to finally get to what they should have had, the drugs that women are given, usually antidepressants right off the bat, sleeping pills right off the bat, the things that doctors are more confident in giving. If you add up the cost of all these screens and tests, emergency visits, on and on and on top of the lost productivity. So women, what we heard in our surveys is women are saying, they're not saying it's menopause, they're saying it's mental health or it's other reasons. They're taking leaves of absence. They're reducing from full-time to part-time. They're taking a job that is less demanding and won't be as hard and be able to hold their symptoms. So it's unbelievable. And a lot of it is held in that lost productivity number for women, lost income. So if you are a woman, I'm going to just use myself and Janet as examples. Janet is making a great salary as a senior executive of a global company. She retires in her 50s because she thinks she can't cope anymore and it's too much stress and it's kind of like her and not her symptoms. She has now lost all of that income going forward. It would be harder for her to get that kind of job because you also sort of miss a window in terms of your age, and then the ageism kicks in and it's very hard. My objective from my 20s was I am going to become the CEO of a publicly traded company. I am breaking the glass ceiling. That was my complete focus, and I worked on my career in order to get me to that point. When offered that opportunity, I had to say no.
Oh my God.
There was no possible way with the kind of symptoms, unmanaged symptoms that I experienced. There's no way. And I will miss that window. Like even if my symptoms are completely controlled, it's just difficult to go back to the place that you were, but you are on the ascent of and try and re-enter that. So that's one area that we want to work. But we heard from nurses and the kind of things that you do. We did many focus groups out in BC. We've talked to women from across the board, women who have had professional careers and now do part-time retail jobs. And I did a focus group with my a group of employees at work just to understand their experience. They were all age groups. One of them, who was in her 20s, said, my mom had a horrible menopause and it impacted the entire household because they couldn't bring in the income that they used to bring in because she couldn't work.
I have a very similar experience. I left banking in 2017 for a variety of reasons, but one of the big ones was I thought I could no longer handle the stress of the life that I'd created. And I, you know, ended up making a decision to step away, which you know, whether or not that was the right decision in hindsight, I don't know. But how sad is it that symptoms for something that every woman or anyone with ovaries, if they live long enough, will go through, sideline was a very big factor contributing to me putting aside a career where I had similar goals and aspirations that you just described. It's, I mean, there's 50% of us on this call right now who've had the same experience. That's crazy.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
I talk about the delta quite a bit. So I say, okay, look, here's a capability at work, caring for her elders, her in-laws, her family, her children, working in the community. This is what she's capable of when she feels good. And then here's what happens when you have unmanaged menopause symptoms. Your capacity declines so significantly, not for a day, not for a week, not for a month. We're talking a decade more. That delta from what is possible for the world and then what is not possible is a delta that we have completely missed in our society. And I am infuriated by that. It's why I started this thing. I'm just so upset that women have to go through this and they shouldn't have to. It's so unjust. It is such a huge health equity issue for women. And most women don't even realize that. Again, their journey takes so long to really fully understand what is happening to them.
Well, and we're probably a couple of decades away from actually getting to a point where women going to their doctor will readily be acknowledged as being perimenopausal and be getting appropriate solutions offered to them and the opportunity to make a choice about what's best for them. So in the interim, what do we do? And maybe we'll start with the workplace. Do you have some specific recommendations that, you know, employers, I mean, this is a big potential loss for them. Never mind that it's just abhorrent and wrong. Let's set that aside for a moment because I might start getting hot flashes even though I haven't been suffering from those yet. But let's talk about, you know, not only is it the right thing to do, this is an important thing to do from an economic perspective. So what can companies start to consider in this space?
I think you're absolutely right that if we push through the healthcare system, it will take a long time to get everything that we need. Education for primary care practitioners, more money for this area, both in research, but also in care and treatment. These are all things that you're absolutely right. I think will take a long time, but we have to get started. Where I feel like the door is opening and there is a greater possibility of making more movement is with the employers. And it's really interesting sidebar story. When Janet and I were contemplating kind of what to do, where to put our focus, which data to zoom in on, I sort of said, we have to focus on the workplace. It's where there's a lot of people, companies will be interested in it. She was really hesitant, very reluctant. She really felt it was a double-edged sword. Women already struggle, already aren't paid as much. We already aren't getting the top jobs. We're already not on enough boards of directors. We're already not CEOs. How, what now? Now we're going to tell our employer we're having menopause symptoms? It's tough.
We actually interviewed a woman and she said, there's no way I'm admitting that I've got menopause issues because I'm already penalized in so many other ways, was her take on it.
It's absolutely true. But with diversity and equity inclusion being such a top priority for so many employers, this idea of a menopause inclusive, and we chose those words very carefully, it makes a lot of sense right now. People don't want to lose their employees. They are working hard at trying to have more equality in the workplace with women. And so we thought that getting some data around that, putting something together that would help workplaces to understand what this is and then how they can help would be a really great start and would be faster, would be a faster access to women than going the healthcare route. And in fact, we're seeing this happening now. This is not a big lift for companies. I'll put it that way. I've led many companies over my career. It's really about culture and communication. So creating a place and the willingness for people, for a woman to be able to say, I'm having a hot flash, I'm leaving this meeting for a minute, or to be able to tell her supervisor what is happening and not feel that there'll be repercussions. The policies that an organization has, I edited the one at my workplace, and it, again, it's not a big lift. It's opening up the opportunity for women to be accommodated if they have symptoms that need more support in the workplace. Are there opportunities, whether it's access to drugs, access to pelvic floor therapy, access to the kinds of things that women could use and would be helpful to them? And we'd really like to get a bit of a movement going with companies joining and getting educated and starting to talk about it. I think one of the things we've learned is companies are sort of surprised. They host these training sessions and there's loads of women that are coming to these sessions. So I think that's a good sign that there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of curiosity. And so it's a really good place to start.
That's fantastic. And to your point, it's not a big lift. It's not this huge involved undertaking, but I think the benefits for a company can be tremendous, right? Just to undertake these arguably simple things that really aren't, it's not about solving necessarily, but it's about acknowledging and supporting.
And that does wonders for a corporate culture as well, right? It's just people want to be heard and they want to be seen. And just that creates such a great energy at a company. So I think that, you know, there's value in that as well.
Are you getting a lot of interest, Trish, from companies for your talks?
Yeah, it's been great. We are a volunteer-based organization. I have a full-time job. Janet has a job, and we're a small but mighty group of volunteers. So considering what we're doing this with, if I could describe it that way, we've exceeded 1 billion media impressions between the two reports. It's being downloaded and used, the data, over and over again. It's the first real data in Canada, and we'll, you know, continue on that. So we're really, really pleased with that. And we've had about over 50 employers join. We're doing training sessions often, frequently. So I think the interest with that will continue.
And do companies get in touch with you via the website?
Yes.
Okay, amazing. We'll be sure to include that in the show notes, and we'll be posting this on our LinkedIn profile and pushing it through those socials as well. Super important. And if I may, kudos on the website. There is menopause, perimenopause data information out there. There are a lot of menopause society websites in various countries. Your site is intuitive, easy to navigate, very approachable. I think some of the other data sources can be somewhat overwhelming, maybe even intimidating. So congratulations. I think you've done a really great job at making this important information really accessible.
Thank you. That's just great to hear.
Trish, the Menopause Foundation of Canada came out in 2022 with another landmark research report called The Silence and the Stigma. And the findings of that report were maybe not surprising, isn't the right word, because we know how blindsided women are by this, but really astounding. And I'd love to know a little bit more about that, some of the details of that report.
Yeah, so that report really wanted to, we were trying to just create what is actually going on with women. And most of them felt unprepared for perimenopause and menopause. Most felt that it was still a taboo. 40% of them felt that they were very alone during this part of their life journey. Less than a quarter of them thought they were knowledgeable on the symptoms. And then what we did is we had a list of symptoms and we wanted to understand women's understanding of symptoms. And so, as you can imagine, hot flashes, night sweats, let's say, you know, 80% of women knew that those were symptoms of perimenopause and menopause. But once you hit some of the other lesser known symptoms, then you had very, very few women that knew anything about them being connected to perimenopause. So for example, heart palpitation, skin issues, hair issues, urinary tract infections, leakage, incontinence, body aches, muscle pain, joint pain, sexual arousal issues, memory loss, all these myriad of symptoms that are, in fact, part of the journey of menopause were not understood by women. I think the other thing for me that was very validating, certainly my experience and so many women that we talk to on a regular basis, was around, okay, who do you trust? Like, who do you go to when you want to talk about this? Well, 80% almost say, I go to my family doctor.
And how's that experience for them?
Yeah, exactly. So of those, like 3/4 of them found it not at all helpful or only somewhat helpful. And 40% of them left feeling they were undertreated. So it shows that women are trying to get help. They're not getting help. And I'm not blaming doctors. They have zero education. They know nothing about this. They have no confidence in understanding. They have no time. They don't have time to listen to a woman talk about all her symptoms and do education and figure out if she's, you know, what treatment would be best for her. They have no time to do that.
Well, and it, unfortunately, menopause doesn't fit into one of those, you know, nice little tidy boxes that doctors are trained to check off, right? And we don't have our own billing. I'm going to fudge up, Mikkel, what is it called? The billing?
We don't. There is no billing code for
there is
menopause.
No billing code, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not appropriate in order to afford the care. But I think to your point, even with that, there just is no time.
I always get a chuckle when I go to the clinic and I see that sign that says, please only discuss one issue. I crack up to myself. It's not funny.
Right? So you've got 20 symptoms.
Of menopause. I wonder which one we should talk about today. Do I need to make 30 individual appointments to get my 5 minutes for each of my symptoms? Anyway, it just cracks me up. I feel like you could do a whole comedy skit on this.
We should email the Baroness von sketch.
Yes.
Yes. To redo do some more of their fabulous work in that regard. Yeah, it's very hard. So how do we address health equity in Canada? And this would apply to any other jurisdiction, I think, too. And I'll maybe just leave it at that. I have some thoughts on it, but I'll just leave it at that. And Trish, please tell us what you think.
Yeah, well, what we plan on doing, we have an advocacy government relations volunteer committee. We are working on articulating, because again, healthcare is provincial, and so you're really going after it one province or territory at a time. There's some elements that would be federal. This, again, you really have to do the deep dive on what are you asking for in relation to each of these different. So it's just a body of work to gather those facts and that information. We want to really help get women to help us with their voices. We really need to, I think, start talking about this. And I can totally understand women not wanting to talk about it. I hid all my symptoms and everything that was going on from my husband for an entire year.
Oh my God. How did you do that? Oh my God.
Again, and I feel like, it's that journey for a woman. First, you're kind of in shock. You're in disbelief. You aren't sure if that's what it is or not. And then you have to accept that you're getting older. You have to accept that you're aging. Mm-hmm. You have to accept that you're older, right? It doesn't mean you can't do anything, but there's a period of time, I think, especially at the beginning of this journey, that is about trying to understand, trying to accept, and trying to move forward in the best way that you can. And I feel like every woman has that period of time of kind of confusion / shock / disbelief, all these things that are happening that they're trying to sort out. But we have to start talking about it. If we don't start talking about it, we will not make it normal in a workplace, in a home. Happiest day when we had a family dinner recently is that my 13-year-old nephew rolled his eyes and said, "Are we talking about menopause again?" I just said, "Oh, I am delighted that you understand what it is and you know what it is, because men have to understand. How can they support a spouse if they don't understand what is happening?" So we need to normalize it. It needs to be able to be talked about at the kitchen table, at a boardroom table.
Yeah. And we need everybody's voice so that the people making decisions about healthcare and about billing codes and about education and medical school understand that this must be a priority, right? This isn't three women. This is the majority of us.
Yeah, there's 10 million women in Canada over the age of 40.
And how many actual doctors that specialize in menopause care in Canada? Not many.
Yeah, number, but it's not many. No, we have to do this, and we have to do it for us, but we have to do it for the women after us. I think about the women who fought to vote, who fought to be in medical schools, who fought to be partners, who fought to be all kinds of different things. We have to fight.
I love this message.
You're right. We do. We need to be riled up, right? Stop worrying about being appropriate. In addition to becoming educated and understanding what's going on with their bodies and asking for the care they need and deserve. What else can women be doing to, I'm going to call it a cause, support this cause?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a website, menopausefoundationcanada.ca, and on our site, you can join. And we're really using this, we don't send a lot of emails or communication. We're really hoping that we can use this as a way to build an advocacy group, people who are willing to sign petitions, who are willing to go see their MLA, their MP, their MPP, as we really strengthen the advocacy drive forward, which will be really ramping up this year. So it would be great if we can get women to support that. And I think for women, it's really hard. There's a lot of female leaders, and we have to not be embarrassed by this topic. So we have to be assertive with our primary care so that we get what we need personally. We have to start educating our workplace, ask human resources for training, like just really start to be that really squeaky wheel about the topic, because more squeaky wheels in workplaces, within healthcare, within government, it all helps.
It does. I had a little bit of a win, personal win in that regard. The health clinic that I go to, I sometimes see a male physician, and I had a discussion with him over a year ago about menopause, and he was not quite dismissive, but pretty close. And he wasn't assessing me. We were just having a conversation about it, and I gave him my thoughts. And recently we ran into each other, and he said, I've been learning more about what we talked about, and I didn't know what I didn't know. And he's actually going to be replacing someone who focuses on hormones in the clinic for a little bit. And it was just, I'm not suggesting that I was the cause of his change, but the point is the fact that he sought me out and wanted to tell me that, I think speaks to the power of each individual voice, right? And we each can make a difference.
I mean, it might not resonate right the first time, but then they hear something on TV and then they hear somewhere else. Wait a minute. We have to start talking.
We do. We will be promoting all of this. We'll have it on our socials, and we'll include all the links in the show notes for this. So we'll see if we can round up some more volunteers, because this is really important and this is great work that you're doing.
I have a question. There are a lot of celebrities getting into the menopause space right now, which is great for so many reasons. It does raise the number of voices. But I'm just curious, how do we know, there's already a lot of conflicting information in the space as well. So how do we know what to listen to and what not to listen to?
Yeah, Michelle, that's such a great question. And I am not an expert this in any way, but I agree with you that there is a huge benefit. Oprah Winfrey talking about her heart palpitations, fantastic. Or other celebrities that are coming forward and talking about their menopause experience. That is so, so helpful. I think that once it moves into and by my product, that's when across the board, not just celebrities, but all products, women really have to understand what has evidence, what doesn't. They might still try some. I try things all the time. I try a new face cream every day. Nothing's stopping me from doing that. I'm sure there is some ranking that is truthful about what's better and what's not. But, I think in the end, it's all about choice, but women have no clue what the gold standard is, for example, around hormone therapy. Doctors have no confidence in prescribing anyway, so they can't access it. I feel like we're at such a base level to even just understand if this is what's happening, this is the gold standard, here's other things that have evidence behind them. There's very little knowledge of that amongst our healthcare system and amongst women. So I feel like the danger is that you have a much higher voice around products that may or may not be helpful and not enough on some of this evidence-based work. But, I'm all for sort of free choice and women choosing their adventure. They don't know the rules. They don't know where the adventure is leading them. They don't have any framework for it right now. There's not enough education.
Great answer. Thank you.
What are your thoughts Trish, on the piece recently published in The Lancet about concerns with the over-medicalization of menopause.
Oh gosh, do not even get me started on that. We seem to really care a lot about a 70-year-old man getting a boner. We don't seem to care. When a woman's uterus is falling out of her vagina. No one is talking about the over-medicalization of erectile dysfunction. No one is talking about that. We have normalized it. Men talk about it all the time. There are loads of risks with taking the various prescription drugs. Nobody's talking about that.
One of them is blindness.
This is a societal problem, so I don't want to pit, you know, women and men. It's not about that at all. It's that as a society, we are making choices about investment, but women are deprived of investments that are essential for their health and well-being. They are not nice to have. This is not a nice to have. This is a must have. This is, I should have, I must have, I need to have.
I deserve to have.
Yes.
Trish, the two groundbreaking, I'm going to call them groundbreaking because they are reports that the Menopause Foundation of Canada have produced so far are fantastic. And I'm wondering if you've got anything else coming down the pipe.
Yeah, we're going to just issue a little mini report based on the focus groups that we did on nurses. One of the things I just want to mention about that, because we often think about women who are in roles that can almost self-accommodate themselves. So women who might be able to work from home, change their hours. But when you think about where women work, most of them are working in places like education, in healthcare, front of the line, retail, caregiving. Mm-hmm. They can't work from home. They can't do a video meeting. They can't change their hours. And so you have this huge cohort of women working at these very meaningful, important societal jobs where their ability to accommodate is extremely limited in the normal ways that I have taken advantage of because I am able to do this and other women. And so I feel like for that cohort really needs even more attention because thinking about how we can help them in an environment where they must be there. They must show up every day. They have to be on. They have to be physically present. Other people are relying on them. So I just have such a soft spot for those women in the sense that their options are much more limited.
That's a great point. And I think something we probably all take for granted, right?
Trish, what is the one thing you want every woman to know about menopause?
Well, it sounds so basic, but I want women to know you are not alone. You are not alone. There are millions of women experiencing something like you are. And we need to gather our forces together to ensure that we are knowledgeable and we can self-advocate. But then beyond that, we need to work at a systemic level with our healthcare system, with our workplaces, and even more broadly with society to ensure that everyone understands what menopause is. And it is really brought in and normalized in the context of everyday life.
That's incredibly powerful. Thank you. One last question, where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, so our website is menopausefoundationcanada.ca, and we're also on social media. And you'll have the handles, which is great. And we'd love for you to join us.
Thank you. It's an amazing organization. So we already follow, but I'm sure all of our listeners will be following too. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the work you're doing.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please take a moment to rate and subscribe to our podcast. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so more women can find us and get a little better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
We also read all the reviews, the good, the bad, and the ugly, to help us continuously improve our show.
We would love to hear from you. You can connect with us through the podcast, on social media, or through our website. Our information, as well as links and details from our conversation today, can be found in the show notes. This podcast is for general information only. It's designed to educate, inspire, and support you on your personal journey through perimenopause. The information and opinions on this podcast are not intended to be a substitution for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. The information on this podcast does not replace professional healthcare advice. The use of the information discussed is at the sole discretion of the listener. If you are suffering from symptoms or have questions, please consult a qualified healthcare practitioner.